It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
Well, and let's do that. We got a busy slate today, I know. Gentlemen, good morning. Wes, good morning. Cecil?
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Wonderful. I know you always come in with a topic chock full of information. But before we do that, do we have a caller on the line from Swansboro who wants to ask a question about property, a commercial property in the Swansboro area? So let's go to Dave out in Swansboro. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Hey, how you doing there, Mike?
Hey,
Dave here.
I'm fine. Thanks for calling in, Dave. Put your question out to in the studio. We have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins here in Moorhead City, and I think the question you have, they can give you some direction or an answer on it. So go ahead. Just put the question out there, Dave.
Okay, this is out of my area of experience, but are there any benefits for an owner of a piece of commercial property to donate that property to a municipality such as Swansboro or any place else? Cecil? Wes?
I guess what you mean in terms of advantage is that maybe there could potentially be a tax advantage.
Okay.
Well, I think you're going to need to check with a CPA about that, or maybe even if you'll call in our office, I'll have our tax lawyer, Andrew Foster, give you some help, and I'd be glad to do that. What threw me a little bit with your question is donating it, is giving it away to a municipality. If you were telling me that you were giving it to a 501c3, you know, maybe for church property, for, you know, Habitat for Humanity, you know, anything that is particularly charitable driven, or the American Red Cross, the Salvation Army, then I think the answer to the question would be absolutely, we should talk with some tax experts and structure your transaction so that maybe you can have some carry forward charitable deductions. Now, the charitable deductions are limited to, you know, your adjusted gross income and things of that nature. So again, all of this would have to be looked at. But when you throw in municipality, that's kind of an interesting twist to your question. Don't you agree, Wes?
I would agree.
Yeah.
And you know, this does fall within the category of Cecil and I knowing 90-something percent of the tax issues that come to us. Andrew Foster, our tax attorney, our tax attorney at Harvell and Collins, knows the rest of that 5-7%. So it's one of those questions. I would agree that, you know, Andrew's been with us for 6-7 years.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And I've yet to take a tax question to him that was in that 5-10% that I wasn't certain about, where he didn't get the exact answer. So it does also sound like this one, I would agree with Cecil, is kind of a structuring type issue, and it's going to be a tax benefit. Just a matter of how it would be structured.
But if Andrew gives you a pass on the municipality issue, then still the transaction needs to be structured in terms of looking kind of at your adjusted gross income, what the deduction might be, how much carry forward there might be, things of that nature. Those are all issues that need to be looked at.
Okay, good. I got it. And,
let me explain. Just, it's worth taking a couple more sentences. All of we lawyers have what's called a JD or Juris Doctorate degree from an accredited, you know, law school, an accredited law school. Some lawyers then take an additional 1 year, sometimes a year and a half, 2 years, but mostly 1 year, and take an entire year of dedicated study in the tax code, the Internal Revenue Code and the tax code and tax transactions at one or more of the postgraduate schools that offer that program. One of the most famous programs and most well-respected respected programs is the one at the Levin School, L-E-V-I-N, school at the University of Florida. And that is, in fact, where Andrew went for that additional year. Now, he was here in North Carolina for law school and then left and went and spent 1 year in Florida completing what is known as a master's in tax, which you are able to obtain after you have your JD degree. So Andrew enjoys the opportunity to explore and research issues in the tax area. So your question is a great one, and I really do invite you to call the office. Ask for either myself, and I'll then connect you over to Andrew, or ask for Andrew directly and tell him that you called into the radio.
Okay, that sounds more than fair, and
yes.
I sure appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Thanks for getting me the expertise.
Absolutely. Dave, yes. I'll send you the phone number to Harvell and Collins. I'll text it to you. But for listeners out there, it's 252-726-9050. Mm-hmm. And I'll send that to you this morning, Dave. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
Good question.
Yeah, it is. You know, Mike, this is a good question to lead us into our topic for the day, because isn't it always about, you know, knowing where the resource is?
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Most folks don't even know what a LLM degree in taxation, what a master's in tax even is, who has it, you know, accountant, CPA. There's a lot of different, you know, resources out there, and sometimes it's just about being guided. Now, last week, Wes and I spoke about trust, and there again, it's all about knowing where to go and where to ask the questions. You know, sometimes folks will come in the office or will telephone ahead and make an appointment, and they'll say, you know, Mr. Harvell, I'm here to create a trust.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that always intrigues me a little bit right out of the gate like that. I'm like, well, I'm looking forward to talking to you about that, but let's talk about that. Why do you think you need a trust? What is your trust about? You know, what is the purpose? What's the objective of your trust? And of course, the client usually is able then to begin to give us some rationale, some reasons for why they think they need a trust. Sometimes they do, and maybe sometimes after a full consultation, they're to much to their surprise. I will say, Wes will say, well, sir, I'm not sure that we really need a trust. I think you've done a lot of research and good writing, but I don't know that we need to go and create a trust. So, you know, a trust, as we said last week, is a contract, basically, Mike, between three people: the creator of the trust, the beneficiary of the trust, whoever that would happen to be, and the trustee or fiduciary, third person, who will keep the, will hold the assets for the benefit of another. And some of the most common trusts are trusts for minor children.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, our minor children, you know, cannot handle assets if mom and dad go off on a trip and, God forbid, don't come back. Sometimes trusts are for special needs children, who can be adult, of course,
sure,
into 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, but they need someone to oversee their resources. Sometimes it's not so much that the child has a special need, but that the parent just simply thinks, due to certain circumstances, it's best that my, quote, 22-year-old not inherit, you know, $1 million, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to hold this back with my brother or sister as trustee until, you know, they're 25 and 30. I don't want to disrupt their education and them starting their own business, you know, that kind of thing. Some of that, there's some reading out there about that being the Warren Buffett mentality. Who knows? Then, of course, Wes and I have spoken about asset protection. So there are many protecting assets from a nursing home.
Sure.
So there are different kinds of trust with different purposes. And our job as good lawyers is to listen carefully to the client, hear the facts of the case, and then apply the facts to the law and, of course, in this context, to the trust law. Now, you know, what we didn't get to talk about last week are trust provisions.
Mm.
You know, this is a contract, and, you know, I mean, it can say anything. Can say anything more or less that the grantor thinks it should say, unless it violates public policy or something of that nature. The bottom line is that, you know, how long will the trustee, the fiduciary, hold this property for the benefit of the beneficiary. I mentioned earlier 30 or 35, okay? Well, that's okay. One of the provisions that's going to have to go in a trust like that is, well, if what if happens if something, what occurs if the child, you know, receives half at 30, but then at 35, something has happened to the child. The child is no longer living. Where does the other half go?
These are the provisions. These are the details.
Correct.
Right. And
correct.
Once they're put into the contract, the provisions, they're not etched in stone per se. I mean, they can be modified, altered.
Most of the time, they can be. That's a good way to talk about the difference between, and these are big words, a revocable or revocable trust,
right,
and an irrevocable trust, which is a trust that one cannot revoke or modify or change. Irrevocable trusts are rare, and serve very, very, very particular purposes. We do use an irrevocable trust in our asset protection planning only for a very small 0.01% of maybe the home place property or the farm property or whatever it might be. But as you can begin to see just in me saying that, it's a very small percentage. The purpose of that is because, again, you have to be careful when you're dealing with an irrevocable trust, language that can't be changed or modified.
You said it's a very small percentage, micro percentage. But what would be an example of that?
An example of that would be that if we transfer under an asset protection trust, if we transfer 100% or fee simple interest in the property, all to a revocable trust, a trust that can be changed or modified or even revoked and put back in the name of the grantor, now the asset is still subject potentially to lien recovery because of the fact that the grantor can take the property back. The grantor can take the property back, then the creditor can demand that the grantor take the property back. If we carve off a 0.01%, a very small percentage of the property, and safeguard that over in an irrevocable trust with the trustee, who is usually the son, the daughter, the trusted person in the family. Now, of course, there is this very small percentage that has been irrevocably and safeguard and is in a safe harbor, and the result of that is that the creditor cannot claw back or get back the entirety of the property.
Interesting. Let's take a short break here and catch our breath with these big words we've been using.
That's a technicality,
this morning,
isn't it?
It's all technicality. The devils are in the details. So that's what we're talking about here is the provisions in trusts. It's 7:45. You're with Harvell and Collins. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 252-247-7282 or call them at the office 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And, you know, talking during the break here, Wes, these trusts, they're not a one-size-fits-all, and they're not for everybody.
You know, not at all. And that's what Cecil really just went through. You know, he named four, five, six different categories, which are kind of the leading categories where folks do need trust. You know, minor children, special needs children, asset protection, these type of things. These are kind of the top of the list. But for the clients, prospective clients that come in and say, you know, I want a trust, you know, we have to do that analysis and make that determination. And, you know, from an attorney's perspective, fine. If you want to spend $2,000 or $3,000 on a trust, that's fine. But we're recommending you don't do that unless it's really needed. Instead, you may just need a very simple estate plan.
Sure.
You know, $500 or so to get your will. Don't spend this extra money. Will and power of attorney and these other related documents. So, you know, we've seen over the years, and I don't think it's quite as prevalent now as it was in the past, but, you know, folks come in with these, you know, boxes of kind of the dock in the box situation, where they go to the seminar and it's the free lunch, and they end up spending $2,500 on this set of documents prepared by an attorney who's off somewhere, and they think that they've accomplished something by, you know, this kind of pomp and circumstance, this this fluff with regard to the production and what they enter and what they sign. But in many cases, the client never needed a trust. There was no necessity for it. There was no legal need for it. There was no, the facts didn't fit that circumstance. Mm-hmm. So they really just, you know, wasted their money on that. We've even seen circumstances where, you know, folks go to these seminars. And again, I don't see these quite as much as now as I have in the past, but still, we've seen it before where folks go and sign the documents, and the intent of the trust really is to avoid probate. I mean, that's what you see if you Google trust. Mm-hmm. Avoid probate, avoid probate. Well, in order to avoid probate, if you're going to use the trust, you have to put assets into it. Well, we've seen circumstances before where these dock-in-the-box documents are sold to someone, and there's never a transfer of any assets into it. So it's just have an empty trust.
It's just hollow.
It's just sitting there. So, you know, sometimes we have to unwind those, which is not that difficult. But what's sad about it is folks are really taken advantage of in those type circumstances. They thought they got something, but they really didn't get much of anything other than, you know, a $20 meal for $2,500.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, let me go back briefly to the avoiding probate thing. If you Google, do I need a trust or that type thing, you will definitely find a lot of information saying you do need a trust. Everyone needs a trust, da, 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 da. But you're not going to find any information particular to North Carolina stating that it's necessary to have a trust in every circumstance. And the reason why is because the probate expense in North Carolina is so incredibly inexpensive compared to, you know, many other states. And obviously we know the internet's, you know, worldwide, World Wide Web. So, you know, we find information from New York, from Florida, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, other jurisdictions where it is kind of the standard estate plan to have a trust that you put your assets into so that the assets then pass pursuant to the terms of the trust upon your passing, upon your death, to avoid the probate expense that's so high in these other states. It's in almost every circumstance not necessary in North Carolina to spend the money on a trust to avoid the little bit of cost to the state, to the locality relating to probate. It just, the cost benefit isn't there. So, you know, you have to be careful. And I guess, like you said a moment ago before the break, devil's in the details.
Sure.
Well, it's our job to get the details. You know, let's learn about your family. You know, how long you've been married, first marriage, second marriage. Are you wanting to provide for your second spouse until she dies, and then whatever is in the trust then go to your kids? Is there a special needs child? Is there a child that you think can't handle money very well?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got to get all these circumstances, all this information, so that we can put together the appropriate estate plan that's going to work for you and not create unintended circumstances, and certainly not waste your money.
Right. And I guess those points you make solidify the fact that it's not a one size fits all, that they're each tailor made to your individual case, your individual family.
Every client who walks in the door has a different story.
Yeah, exactly.
Another trust, that we see the need for and are applying these trust provisions in a trust document for a client, or is the client that comes in with their spouse, but they're in a second marriage with children from a prior marriage. And they make the comment, Mike, that, you know, we have agreed between the two of us, we did this long before we got married, that we would live together. We are married. We have a home together. But that when I die, my assets are going to go back to my children. and her assets are going to go back to her children.
Right.
And we've agreed this, and our children know it, and everything is, you know, all hunky-dory here. Well, you know, there's some issues about that, okay, in North Carolina, and there's some explanations that a good lawyer needs to help these clients more fully understand that put those facts on the table. And one of the solutions is going to be some conversation about discussing, you know, a spousal trust.
A spousal trust.
It's a very, 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 a very specific trust serving a very specific purpose, which, of course, most trusts do that, you see, as we're beginning to hear, you know, special needs, mm-hmm. particular purpose, protecting assets from a nursing home. Again, a particular, very specialized purpose. Spouse's trust, second marriage, children from a prior marriage. So we begin to see and understand that a trust can be very, very different from one to the other. They're not all the same. And then secondly, we begin to understand that they're serving a very particular purpose.
Yeah.
Wes and I, of course, we're trust lawyers, and but you know, we can read through a trust within a matter of minutes and be able to discern what the purpose of that trust happened to be by whatever lawyer from wherever jurisdiction, mm-hmm. why they created it. It was created for tax purposes. Okay. We're seeing less and less of those now, Mike. Trusts that were created for estate tax purposes, because the estate tax has escalated so very high now into the millions and tens of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And so people are not having to create the kind of tax mitigation, estate tax mitigation trust that was just very, very common, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But we see that language in trust, and we know why it was there.
It jumps right out at
you. It jumps right out at you, yes.
Let's take our last break here so we have a little bit of time to wrap up today's topic. We're talking about trusts with Harvell and Collins. If you'd like to, if you have further questions, I suggest you call them after the show at the office, 252-726-9050. It's not a one-size-fits-all. Every case is unique. So give them a call and let them know what your situation is. Or go online to harvellandcollins.com. Either way, you can reach the attorneys there. We're going to take a short break here and return with our final comment. Once again, another interesting topic from Harvell and Collins. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming in and discussing trusts. We could probably talk more about this in future shows, but Wes, I'll let you wrap up today.
Yeah, so I think I have a minute and a half.
You got a minute, you got 90 seconds.
So, you know, one of the comments that Cecil just made, you know, just kind of sparked my attention a little bit. You know, one of the things we hear about is the second marriage, and then the spouse saying, we have this agreement that either, both of them say,
yeah,
we have this agreement, then that when the first dies, it's going to all go to the survivor, and then it's going to be split out among the kids. And that's what we want to happen. And we don't need any trust to do that. We just are going to, it's going to happen, you know, and we trust each other. We're going to make sure that happens. Man, that is a, oof. That you're setting yourself up, because what happens is upon the death of the first, it all goes to the second. And
yeah.
the second, in many cases, obviously, you know, the second is in their 70s, and then they're in their 80s, and they're in their 90s. Time passes, and their kids are talking to them, and they're involved.
Yeah.
Their kids, not the kids of the first who died. Okay? And that's the way the relationship goes.
Yeah.
So I've seen it many times before where they don't have it set up properly,
mm.
and what they intended to do, running out of time, what they intended to do doesn't happen because they did not put the plan in place, which you could easily do with a trust to make sure it happens.
You got
to
do that.
Yeah.
Give the folks at Harvell and Collins, thank you, gentlemen, for coming in this morning. This is very enlightening. Call them, 252-726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll do it again next Tuesday, gentlemen. Thank you.
Yes.